Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Sisters Who Kill. Okay, listen, y'all, you know that we have been trying to use this equipment and every week we do something different and I don't know what happened this week. There's an echo. Please do not yell at me about it on the internet. I am trying to figure out what I did wrong and how not to do it again, but I'm sorry. I've already cried myself to sleep. And if you yell at me on the internet, I'll probably cry more. So this episode is honestly really great. No podcast that we've seen has done this episode. And we have some really great discussion. So stay tuned to the episode. Gird your loins. Marah is personally sorry. I'm going to go ahead and speak for Tazzy. She apologizes too. We are figuring it out and we love y'all. Enjoy the show. What's going on, everybody? I'm Marah.
And I'm Tez.
And welcome back to Sisters Who Kill. Okay, so you know how when you are learning how to write a paper in elementary, middle school, and they tell you to form a question, you ask who, what, when, where, why, and how. You should have those answers for a full story. This one, it took a while to get there, and I don't know if we got it. All right, so let's go ahead and get into our players. First, we have David Johnson. This is Monique's boo thing. We have Carl Michael Howard. This is David's cousin him. We have Corey Knox, who is the local Louisiana plug. We have Corey Kitts. This is Monique's husband. This is also the victim. And then we have Monique Kitts, our murderess. Okay, so this week's story takes place in Addis, Louisiana. That's how they talk. Bring your mic closer. That's how they talk. Which is right outside of Baton Rouge. So Monique Kitts was born in 1969 in Plaquemine, Louisiana. She was the youngest of five siblings, and her mother described her as a good, easy child. Like, she didn't have no problems out of her. While in high school, Monique was very popular. But she wasn't really an athlete or anything. She was kind of into the community service clubs, you know, Habitat for Humanity or something. I don't know. I don't know exactly what she is, but the community service clubs. She was always known as a nice, as a caring person, and she always dreamed of working with kids. So she attended McNeese State College, but decided that, you know, college wasn't for her, and she dropped out after 2 years. Then she moved in with her sister, and she got a job at Walmart. That is where she met Corey Kitts.
Corey Kitts was born September 7th, 1969, and was also originally from Plaquemine, Louisiana. He attended Southern University for a little while after high school and ended up dropping out of college as well. He was known as outgoing jokester, and he played the drums and loved to get his hands dirty with work. Corey and Monique were around 21 years old when they met each other, and Corey had already had a daughter from a previous relationship.
Right.
Once Corey and Monique fell in love, they were inseparable. They eventually gave birth to their first child together, a daughter named Dory Kitts. The two got married, and by the time Monique was 24 years old, she stopped working at Walmart and began to work at her sister's daycare. She worked at her sister's daycare for a while and then ended up opening up her own daycare.
It's like her dream, right? Like, right. Working with kids.
It is. And see, what had happened was Corey got a job down at the chemical plant, and they said this job paid good money. Like, then he, I guess, was able to fund her daycare, and she was able to leave her sister's daycare and start her own.
Right. So they were business partners, yeah. Basically, even though he didn't handle the day-to-day, he was like that silent partner, probably still made important decisions.
You think so in the thing?
I mean, maybe. He probably invested money. I think if they're husband and wife
in the... it, but like, kind of, it's, I just need you to fund it, but it's like my shit and his shit is over there.
And maybe she had plans to buy him out one day.
Yeah.
That's what I would do.
You know, her daycare was doing really well. She expanded, even had to get a bigger place. So then she ended up expanding. They were doing really well. So he's got his good-ass job. She's got her successful-ass daycare. Mm-hmm. They sitting pretty, right?
One of the big things is that, like, her daycare, she had it set up. Because there's some daycares have it set up so that if low-income families can get government assistance to go in. So the money comes straight to the daycare and the kids get to go for free. So finding those daycares that
you
are good quality
government assistant money, it's a hassle at first, but once you get it, that's a guaranteed check. You don't want to let it go.
Yeah.
And so this was kind of her dream. She got to work with kids. She ended up, when she had her son, her second child, had him growing up in the daycare. Like, didn't it's have perfect. To worry about, you know what I'm saying?
Got it's
to
perfect. Be if that's, if that's something that you really like.
Something that you're passionate about. Mm-hmm. I'm sure if you like working with other people's kids, you're going to feel guilty being away from your kid.
And so having your got kids to have along is perfect. Perfect.
They trying to move on up. Like, this couple, they started off in Walmart.
And she was staying at her sister crib.
Staying at her sister crib.
I feel that. You want
to
come up.
They left and built their own house, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Built their dream home. They went to the suburbs. They picked a real nice neighborhood. They built their dream home. And they were like this happy family with the two kids looking like the Berenstain Bears out here. It was mm-hmm. perfect.
I mean, yeah, they done came up in... They didn't come up overnight. Like, you can tell that they really worked for it. Like, 2000 is when he got the job at the chemical plant. They didn't open up... They didn't get a home. They didn't buy a home till 2006.
Yeah.
And they met in what, late 90s?
Late 90s.
Come on. That's a long time to be with somebody and hold you down and really see a growth, you know?
But, you know, and they're high school sweethearts.
Right. Like,
are they high school sweethearts, though? Because they met at Walmart. So why did the snap just because keep
they
saying?
Went, just they because were... they went to the same high school and they were born in the same year does not make them high school sweethearts. I want to get into later about the Snap versus Tamara Hall and Snapped in general, but I don't think this is the time. Let's just finish the story. Y'all just stay tuned to the end of the podcast because I definitely have something to say.
Their house that they built, it was this never-ending project. Corey's mm-hmm. pretty handy around the house, so he's like adding additions to it. He's never really finished with it. He's making a deck. His daughter says that after he built the deck, he was going to put a jacuzzi on it. Like, they was trying to live their best fucking life, okay?
Right, so... On June 9th, 2010, Monique pulls out $4,500 from the bank. $4,000 of that was for bills. Well, one source said it was for bills. Another source said it was for Disney World.
Right. They was like, Corey handles the bills. But the couple was going to Disney
World.
But
I saw more sources say bills, so let's just say bills. And Corey, at the plant, he worked nights. So Monique usually left the money. Like, their routine was that she left the money on the nightstand in cash, and he would go and do what he needed to do once he woke up from working the night shift. He usually didn't wake up until around noon. It was kind of routine for them. He wakes up and the money is not there. So he calls his wife. He's like, hey, you know, you leave the money here. Where's the money? She's like, oh, yeah, I left it on the dresser. I mean, on the bedside table. Like, I said that I would. And he's like, it's not here. And turns out Corey had already been suspicious because, like, that earlier that day, he saw this red car kind of lurking out in his neighborhood. And remember, they don't move to the suburbs. Ain't no cars just lurking outside. So he was already nervous to the point where his daughter, he warned his kids before they left, hey, there's a red car outside. Y'all be careful. Like, had this nigga on high alert.
But the daughter was like, I'm not taking that seriously.
Right, being of course. A dad. I mean, okay, daddy, whatever. So Corey is upset. He's paranoid about this money missing. His wife says the money's supposed to be there. He saw a suspicious car outside. So he calls the police. And the 911 call is so weird. It's like,
I may have lost some money.
Right, I may have gotten robbed. I think something happened. He describes the car. Okay, and this is where the story really doesn't make sense to me. So he ends up having to leave to go to work. He's waiting on an officer to come. He has to leave to go to work. So the officer pulls up. So he makes this 911 call. The officer pulls up. By the time the officer gets there, Corey has to already leave because he's got to be at work.
I don't understand how you call the cops to your house and not be there.
So this is what I'm thinking. Like, it's the suburbs. First, I was thinking niggas. Like, they not going to pull up to the hood. But they live in a nice neighborhood. So why weren't the cops there faster? I saw a source that said the police were there in 2 minutes. But I just can't fathom that in 2 minutes I called the police. I don't know, brushed my teeth from my sleep, washed my face, got dressed, and left the house for work in 2 minutes.
Or maybe he was calling the cops on the way out.
Well, the police ended up having to wait outside for 20 minutes. I guess the officer was just waiting to see if anybody showed up or waiting to see if there was anybody there. Corey obviously is gone, so Monique shows up. She got the kids. It's the afternoon. This is their normal routine. And she's like, oh, yeah, my husband called me. He said that he saw this kind of car, kind of talks to the police. Yeah, the $4,000. I don't know. We probably misplaced it. Blah, 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 blah. The police take the report. They leave. Later on, Monique calls up the police officer that she wrote the report with and said, oh, the $4,000 was found in the wash machine. And they're like, oh, okay. Case closed. The car is really what's most important. It was a red Trans Am.
All right. Things seem to go back to normal for only a short amount of time until Friday, July 9th, 2010. Around 1 p.m., Monique comes home with her two kids, Dory, who's 18, and Corey Jr., who's 11. Once they walk through the front door, Monique kind of pulls her hand out like, stand back. And she kind of look around. She sees some broken glass on the floor. She's a little concerned, and she starts calling out for her husband. Corey! Corey, you in here? The kids are like, Dad? Dad, come on, stop playing. You know, because he said Corey was a jokester.
He
you know
played too much. Yeah, he wanted those people. Yeah.
So they make their way up to the master bedroom, and she sees Corey in the bed, and she touches his foot like, nigga, get up. And when she touches his foot, she realizes he's dead. Monique starts. He's clearly been shot in the head. There's blood everywhere. She's screaming. Her kids are screaming.
Everybody's going crazy.
Walk into this tragic scene. So Monique gets on the phone. She calls the police. She's crying. She's hysterical. The police arrive, and no one is outside to greet them. The door is open, and they can hear her screaming from the master bedroom. Monique and her children are still in there, you know, crying over the body, you know, questioning everything.
You want to read this and go and try it all again?
All again?
Well, at least from...
I just felt like you have said crying and screaming.
They were crying. That's all they were saying, crying and screaming, and Monique falling over.
I was like, am I saying crying and screaming?
No, because they still were crying and screaming. That's what people do. They cry and they scream.
Yeah, it says she starts screaming.
She starts screaming. Oh, my
Everyone
goodness.
Everyone was screaming and crying.
Everybody, that's what happened.
They hear screams.
They hear That's how the police
screaming.
Police
crying
came in. They were still screaming and crying. That's what. Those are the facts. Those are the facts. The facts are screaming and crying. Screaming and crying. What do you want? Wailing. What we can? Do you want me to look up some synonyms?
No, I just think they get what's going on.
No, they don't. It was a mess. It was a mess. What would you do? I'd be screaming and crying.
Yes.
And y'all would find me in there screaming and crying. There's nothing more that I would be doing that I could do.
Then she called the cops.
And that's what she did.
She walked in, she screamed, and she cried.
I think the only thing that I would have done different is I would have ushered the kids out of the house because the police came and they weren't outside. Like, I definitely would have. But I guess when you're in such a state of shock, you don't know what you're going to do. And
I might have got them out the room. I don't know if I'd have put them out the whole house.
Yeah, I would have definitely got them
out. Or check the house. Is there somebody in there?
Yeah. This is going to take forever to edit, dude.
I'm so sorry, friend. Woo! The police arrive and usher the family out of the house because it's now officially a crime scene.
Right.
When they get there, they look around the house for evidence. Many of y'all are familiar with. We're looking for forced entry, signs of forced entry. We're looking for fingerprints.
The whole nine, round it up.
The house is messed up. So in the kitchen, there was a baker's wrap and it had glasses on it. The baker's wrap was knocked over. So the glasses are, that's the glass that she saw broken all over the floor. Mm-hmm. There's an end table. It's flipped over. So it kind of looks like the house has been ransacked a little. So they're like, okay, let's see how they got in. Let's see what they took.
Right.
Nothing was stolen. No signs of forced entry. They get to the bedroom to look at Corey's body. They see that he's been shot in the head 3 times with a 9mm. Once in the ear, once in the cheek, and once in the neck. There were shell casings surrounding the king-size bed where he laid. It was clear that Corey was still asleep when he was wounded.
Mm. They also said from where the perp was standing that they could tell that the person was basically stationary because of how the shell casings fell.
After looking at the body, they're checking out the master bedroom and they're like, even in here, none of the dresser drawers are open, you know, but we're going to see they've been messed with. They open a dresser drawer by the bed and they see a gun. It's Corey's gun. Not a 9mm, but still.
A gun.
Yeah.
Just something he had to protect himself. Except for when you sleep.
Listen.
Except for when somebody knows your sleep schedule.
Listen. Now to the detectives, it's looking less like a robbery gone wrong and more like somebody who knew him and had access to him came in. They're starting to put together a few things, the police. One, there's no forced entry into the home at all. Two, there seems to be nothing taken from the home when this was supposed to be a break-in. And three, the way that the furniture was overturned and the way things were broken, it felt staged. I stole some shit around, so it looks fucked up in here.
It's kind of crazy because like having no evidence, there's always some evidence, and now they're starting to have to look between the lines.
Right. In the bedroom, there were no drawers pulled out. Like, the drawers in the bedroom hadn't been ransacked.
Right, everybody's looking for a sock drawer.
It's not really feeling like a stranger attacked them. So, of course, now thinking it's somebody close, they want to talk to Monique and her children. But none of them have much information to provide because they walked into the crime scene. They're clearly upset. And on the Tamron Hall show, the detective said that the children were unconsolable for a long time and Monique was crying on the floor.
Screaming and crying, like I said. Like everybody is. And yes, you heard that right. Tamron Hall has like a true crime show that has seasons. Like seasons.
She's got a nice voice for it, too. Mm-hmm. I like it.
So they take Monique and the kids down for questioning. What happened? What were they doing all day? Where were you? All of that. And they tell everything that happened. Monique tells her about her day. The kids tell about what they did. They don't have any idea. No, their father doesn't have any enemies. They have no idea who would do this. So detectives find out that Dory, their daughter, actually had a boy over the night before, like snuck him into the house and then snuck him out the next morning. So detectives are like, okay, is this a situation of like a Lori Cooper? Is this a off my daddy type of thing? Is this, they were trying to see if like Dory or this boy, or maybe Corey woke up and saw this boy in his house and something happened. Like what? People were trying to figure out maybe there's a connection. So they bring Dory in and they're like, why didn't you tell us that you had a boy at the house? And she's like, I, you know, if anybody knew that I had a boy at the house, and I would be in trouble. Like my dad would be upset. I was upset. I didn't want to, you know, she's a teenager. Like she was sneaking niggas in and out of the house. She was sneaking a nigga in and out of the house. So they end up, but he has, she's like, he has nothing to do with it. Like Dory is like, yeah, I had him in the house, but he has nothing to do with it. He has absolutely nothing to do with this murder. I just didn't want nobody to know that I was doing something I ain't had no business doing. So it doesn't take long for the police to find him. And he goes out to the station. The police are like, well, were you there? Did you kill Dory's father? He's like, no, I did not. Like, how would you think? Why would you think I did that? I absolutely, yeah, I snuck in and out the house, but like, I didn't kill her dad. And they take him down to the station. They're questioning him. He doesn't know anything because he has nothing to tell. And finally, they're like, okay, well, take a polygraph, which like, polygraphs aren't even admissible to court. And he was nervous. Like, my man could have failed that thing. But he passed with flying colors because he had nothing to do with this. With the runner. Yeah, so he's free to go. So detectives are stuck. They are back to square one. They don't know what to do. So they're like, okay, let's pull Corey's phone records. Maybe they'll have something that we need in there. You know, phone records can tell you everything. Who you talk to, where you've been. So they pull Corey's phone records. And turns out he's been talking to quite a few people. Like six people. Six women. He had six hoes on the side that he was talking to consistently. And so now the police are like, okay, we have to clear six women's names. And then one woman in particular was talking to Corey the night before, like, you know, he works night, so when he was about to go to sleep or whatever, and pulling the whole like, come over, you want to see me, I don't know, I want to see you, are you gonna come over, come see me type of shit, right? So they end up pulling this woman in for questioning, and she's like, oh my gosh, like, yeah, we were texting like that, and yeah, I was messing around with him, but I didn't even go near his house, he didn't come over, we didn't even get to see each other, you know, we were just talking. And so they end up pulling her phone records. They pull up her phone records. Turns out she was far away from, not far away, but she wasn't on, she didn't ping on the cell phone towers that close to his house. So six women, because he was fucking around with six women on his wife. I want to keep repeating that. So they ended up clearing her name.
So the detectives, they go and they pull Monique's phone records, and they see that Monique had a few frequent numbers going in and out. And one of those numbers belonged to a man named David Johnson. The detectives are like, all right, let's find out what this little relationship is with one another, because his name's turning up a lot, right? So they find out that Mr. David Johnson was a milk delivery driver for Klein Peters Farms Dairy and a daycare. And Monique's daycare was on his route, you know, to deliver milk to the kids. According to the appeals document, the two met in 2006 when they were introduced by David's boss. He delivered to that daycare and the daycare that her sister owned also. They set up this little payment thing. And then one day Monique didn't have her checkbook or the money or whatever when David came in. And from there, it kind of started a little flirtatious conversation between the two. They exchanged the numbers. They start talking on the regular. When they exchanging the numbers, y'all, my guy said, is this for business or is this for pleasure?
Monique said, you decide.
Right. So right, you already know what's going on.
So the detectives ask around and they're like, okay, we're hearing that there's rumors that you and this guy are seeing each other behind Corey's back. Which is real suspicious to them, because they definitely asked her in the interview, were y'all happy? Were y'all having an affair? They like, you got all this going on behind Corey's back. Corey got all this going behind your back. We just got to dig a little deeper. At one time,
she saw him at the daycare.
They even talked to Corey's oldest daughter, and she says that She was up at the daycare one of these days, and she seen Monique in the car with the milkman. And she took a picture, and she sent it to her auntie. And her auntie was like, leave it alone, child. That's not your business. And she was like, I just think I should tell my daddy. And she was like, it's not your business. You don't know what they saying in that car. Just stay out of it, right? So she stayed out of it. The cops, they asking Monique. And she was like, no. No, we wasn't messing around and having no tights of relationships. I do his taxes. I'm a businesswoman, okay? Mm-hmm. I've been doing his taxes for a few years now. About, what'd she say, about four or five years. So then I kind of start to look into the taxes, like, okay, let's see what you've been doing on these taxes. And you know how we do tax. It's clear. She creates a false business account, like a fake car wash or something. And she make it look like his kids were all attending the daycare so that she could get government assistance for the kids. And all of this money was going straight to his pocket.
So they run his name, and turns out he's no stranger to the police. He actually just got out of... Okay, so I was trying to figure out this timeline. I think he worked as the milkman, and then maybe he went to prison, and then he came out. Because he just got out of prison. His wife left him, and he went into prison because he pled guilty to misconduct with a minor, like sexual misconduct with a minor. So he was in prison for about 4 years, and it turns out the relationship had a lot to do with money. So, like, if he asked for $1,000, she gave it to him. You know, she was doing the scams for him. So I guess it was his money. Maybe she was taking her cut. It was his scammed money.
Nigga, that's my money. I work for that shit.
So I feel like he had to serve prison after the milk route when they met. Because, like, how are you going to be a milk route with a preschool in your district if you've been convicted of misconduct with a minor?
Maybe he's not on the sex offender.
So I was trying to figure out this time. But the one that I'm going to assume was that milkman went to prison, wife left, then got out. Because turns out, they did a little bit more digging. And he's staying in an apartment down where they at. But the apartment is not in his name. The apartment is in Monique's name. How? And Monique is also paying the bills at the apartment.
This is the part I don't understand. You can't tell me that her nigga didn't know, Corey didn't know, because they said that she handed him the cash for the bills. This nigga know what money coming in and out. You handle the bills. So how you ain't know you paying for a whole ass apartment?
Doing getting
money's
cash?
Money's got to be missing.
So
if
maybe
she's paying for it.
Obviously, if she's putting the cash on the dresser for him to just go out and actually pay the bills, like go to wherever you go to pay the bills, that means he's not really looking at the books. She's doing the books because she's doing the taxes. So he is just getting what needs to be done from his wife. She's handling the money. So I bet you he probably trusts his wife so much with the money because they've been together for so long and have built so much together.
Because you have to remember the way her mama tell it. They was having arguments about the money.
Right. He was upset because she was spending too much time at Walmart and she was spending too much money, but he made
first
money.
She was saying he spent too much money on the house
money.
And was trying to be too extravagant. And then he was like, you spending too much money on the furniture, but how you gonna have a nice ass house and I have nice ass furniture? So I don't know. I feel like he probably is tapped into the money. You know what I mean?
Somehow he was unaware that all this money was missing or she was just keeping it in a separate account. So then she starts telling David, she's like, oh, you know, you my boo. I love you. I just wish my husband was dead. I just wish that he wasn't here anymore so we could just really live happily ever after or whatever. Which is like, why do you want me dead? Just divorce me. Like, you know. So David had a friend of his brother named Carl, but he called him his cousin, you know. But, you know, it's like, yo, your brother's friend. So David introduced Carl to Monique because, you know, Monique does taxes.
She does.
So that's how they met. So that's how they met up because Carl lives all the way in Atlanta and got Monique doing the tax. So when you know you got somebody doing good taxes, you're going, you know. So Monique asked David, you know what, do you think you know Carl would kill my husband? You think he'd do the hit? And then David's like, you know, maybe you're gonna have to ask.
So Monique hits up Carl and they've been texting back and forth on Facebook Messenger, back and forth. They got calls back and forth. And now remember, Carl lives in Atlanta, and he is what the detective described as.
They said he was a thug, and he had pictures online with drugs and guns. He was kind of a gangster.
So they also look into the messages, and turns out Monique is being a little flirty with Carl, you know? She has some sexy text messages in there, and her DMs popping and shit. She's saying little shit like, oh, everyone will get theirs one day, and the suspense is killing me. Real fishy shit going on. Her messages continue. They're like, just be patient, you know. Soon come, baby, soon come. On July 2nd, the detectives see that Monique sent Carl a picture of her living room. And not so much the living room, but like the living room floor. Their floor had this big, nice fleur-de-lis in the middle of it.
Yeah, just one big Fleur de Lis in like the center of like circles.
Fancy toweling.
Kind of looked like
a fancy toweling. The towel was placed to make a pattern and shit. And with the picture, she left a message saying, "This is my living room floor." Now, this was July 2nd, so a week before Corey was murdered. And the detectives are like, all right, this is something we can work with. Let's go to Georgia and we're going to find Mr. Carmichael.
So when they meet up with Carmichael Howard, Carl didn't really have much to say. They didn't really have much evidence on him, and he knew that. And the detectives really knew that they didn't have much concrete evidence to arrest him or anything. But when Carmichael pulled up, he was driving a red Mazda Grand Am. The same car that was described lurking outside of the house a month before a murder. Literally a month to the day before the murder when Corey made that 911 call. So with nothing really in tow, they head right back to Louisiana. But they pull his phone records. They pull his phone records, and when they pull his records, they can see pingings of Carl's phone off the tower. Carmichael went from Atlanta to Baton Rouge to Alice, wherever it's called. So they see this route on June 9, 2010, Atlanta, Birmingham, Sidel, Baton Rouge, Addis. His phone pings then at the same tower around the kid's home. So this is also around the time where Corey made that 911 call about this car. They check the phone records for a month later on July 9th. Same thing. His phone ping tracked him from Atlanta to Baton Rouge all the way to Addis, and then again pinging him, his phone pinging on the tower closest to the Kitt household, and it was at the same date and the approximate time of death. So they keep looking into his phone records, and they're like, okay, every time that he comes to Baton Rouge, he seems to like he's hitting up Monique, he's hitting up David, and there's this other number that he keeps hitting up. So they're like, okay, let's find out who this other number is. And that local number is traced to a guy named Corey Knox. Now, this is Corey Knox, not Corey Kitts. Corey Kitts is the victim. Corey Knox is who we're talking about. Corey Knox sold drugs in the Baton Rouge area. So he's kind of the local drug dealer. And they wanted to find a relationship between Corey and Carl. But, like, you know, was it a local plug? Was he just, you know, getting his fix while he was in town? Or was it something a little bit deeper? They pull up Corey Knox's phone records. And they see that Corey Knox, he's never had communication with Monique. He's never had communication with David. He's only talked to Carl. So they go and they see... They pull up on Corey Knox and they're looking for any evidence. They're trying to talk to him in his face, see his reaction, but they're also looking for another key piece of evidence. Remember, there's that red Trans Am. That was the month before the murder. But on the day of the murder, the neighbors didn't see a red Trans Am. The neighbors saw a silver SUV. So they're like, okay, we still haven't located this silver SUV. Maybe it's a clue. Maybe we don't. We don't know who this guy is. Maybe he's just a drug dealer. So Corey's like, look, I have no idea what happened. I don't know what's going on. Corey doesn't have a red Trans Am. Corey doesn't have a silver SUV, but Corey mama got a silver SUV. So the police are questioning him. And then finally he's like, can I call my mama?
That was not the call you were supposed to
He calls his, that was not the call, but he, listen, he said he needed to call his mama. So he calls his mother.
Mama.
They excuse themselves. Basically, you know, everything at the police station is recorded. He calls her. He's like, hey, you remember when Legs asked me to go across the bridge a while ago? Well, he trying to get me caught up in this murder. Detectives were like, got him.
I don't know why they call Carmichael Legs. It's because my fella was bow-legged, and I mean bow-legged. They
say yes, Carmichael was very bow-legged.
Yeah,
he was also a big guy.
Big fella, okay? My man was about 425 pounds, and he was bow-legged as hell. They said that man couldn't move too fast. Yeah, that's Legs.
So the detectives during the time of the investigation, detectives are working, but they're keeping their cards very close to their chest. They really haven't put a lot out to the media. And almost 3 years after the murder in March of 2013, the DA office finally starts handing out indictments. They hand out charges for second degree murder and conspiracy to commit second degree murder to Monique Kitts and Carl Howard. Only to Monique and Carl. Now, Monique's little boo thing, David Johnson, he goes ahead and he's like, look, I will testify against her in court if you will go ahead and give me immunity. And the DA office is like, all right, bet. Corey Knox, Him and his mama car went ahead and go ahead and pled guilty for accessory to first-degree murder after the fact. Them two was singing. They was telling it all. So Monique, you know, she gets ready for trial.
Take that shit to trial, bitch. Take that shit to trial.
Not all that money. Still can't hold you down. Money don't mean nothing.
Can't do shit with money in jail. I mean, you can, but better out here. It's much better out here.
I'm talking about she didn't give him all that money. He couldn't be loyal enough to hold her down. I mean, to like, he snitched on her. I'm snitching.
It was fun while it lasted. Sometimes you got to live in the moment. So during the trial, David gets up and tells the entire story. Carmichael gets up and says he called Corey to help be the driver because there's only so much you can do when you got wobble like. Goes into the house through an open door. In this house, you have to cross through the kitchen, the living room, and then you get to the master. They said that Carmichael walked through the house, shot Corey 3 times while he was asleep, and then staged the house to look like a robbery and fled.
Are you about to talk shit?
How you think this big ass man that's exactly came in here and threw this shit around?
No, he didn't throw anything around. He broke a glass and placed 3 things over. He couldn't move. You know what I mean? He couldn't move.
Run
so
out the house.
So how is he supposed to do
and then
this crime?
You just gonna pick the biggest man to do it like they not gonna see him in there? That's a nigga you can't miss.
Even if you had that schedule all the way down pack, right? That does not mean he's a big, your neighbors are gonna see that. He wobbling in and out. I mean, that's just not the type of person you want to commit crimes for you. All right. So the prosecutors also bring Corey's sister onto the stand, and she had a little story to tell too. So a couple of days before the murder, the sister-in-laws run into each other at the grocery store, and they're like, oh, hey girl, blah, 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 whatever. And Corey's sister is like, oh, I have a spiritual morning walk, would you like to join me on my walk? And they're like, okay, sure. She's kind of ecstatic to do so. So they schedule the walk for whatever day, I think it was the Thursday, and they walk. Corey's sister says that Monique was energetic. She was talking. She even said to her, she admitted to her that she knew that Corey was cheating on her. But nothing kind of out of the ordinary, you know, just like marital woes. They had been together for a while or whatever. But the next day, on the 9th, they went for their early morning walk, which was the day of the murder. And Corey's sister said that she was kind of up. She was constantly on her phone. It wasn't like the day before where they really actually got to have a conversation. Like, the walk together was purposeful. She was on the phone the whole time. Later that day, Corey's dead. So, you know, just a little coinky dink. And also, they were trying to figure out what is the real motive? And everybody said that maybe the motive was money, because Corey had a $500,000 life insurance policy. And they asked Monique, they were like, oh, we got her, because they asked her in an interview, they were like, what's y'all insurance policy? She was like, oh, you know, I don't know. They're like, have you looked into getting your funds? And she lied. And she was like, no,
okay,
I haven't.
See, the thing is, this was the second time they interviewed her. I don't know why she lied, but this was the second time they interviewed her. So it's not like it was the very first day he's dead and she already touched it. They said she didn't touch it till 5 days after. They said that was very soon, though.
But that's also...
That's what I'm saying.
But what about funeral costs? If a person passes... And we know that at least we need to have a memorial. How are you going to pay? Burials are expensive.
And that's what the life insurance
memorial
is
services
for,
are
right?
Expensive. Even if you... Exactly. It's for to cover funeral expenses and to make sure that your family can take, you know, to help them maintain while you're gone.
And that nigga was bringing in money.
Right. So he was only worth, what, 5 years worth of his salary to you? If he was bringing in $100,000 a year? And then another thing that the prosecution was trying to do, the detectives were trying to say, and they were going really in on the Tamara Hall show about this, and Tamara Hall literally rolled her eyes in their face. They said that, well, you know, when Monique was very young and when they met, she was skinny and beautiful and this, that, and the third. And, you know, she had kids and time, so she was feeling very insecure. And so because of her weight gain and insecurities, she was looking for love from other men through money. And y'all, it's on Discovery Plus. Y'all have to watch how Tamara Hall rolls her eyes in this man's face, because, like, he has 6 hoes. She had one in a possum. And it wasn't like she was dealing with no itty bitty niggas either. Like, they were all, maybe that was her. I don't think that you can just be like, oh, she was insecure,
right,
so she killed her husband. Like, that is a big reach. Like, and just like, how, that's such a man's way of thinking. Like, oh, the woman must have felt insecure into her man, so she killed him. No, maybe he was shitty.
Well,
he was cheating on me with 6 other women.
Lost her look, so he wasn't treating her as well as he used to.
But she had somebody else doing it. So, and he clearly had some as well. So it's like, goes back to my question to her, why not divorce him instead of kill him?
On November 20th, 2014, Monique and Carmichael were found guilty of second degree murder and conspiracy to commit second degree. They were both sentenced to life in prison. Damn, Carmichael.
For wobbling in there three shots. So, yeah, that's the story. All right, y'all, it's time for...
Well, I'm not black. I'm OJ.
I ain't do it, but if I did, this is how I would have got away with it.
Let me tell you.
What you got, friend? Because there are quite a few mistakes. We can just, like, bounce back and forth. One.
But if I did, not a St. Carmichael in that house.
I ain't do it, but if I did, if I don't have anybody in my immediate circle that I know can kill and get away with it, I'm not going to keep outsourcing for it.
But if I did, I would have not had my kids come and see their daddy dead laying on the bed.
I ain't do it, but if I did, I would have made sure that there were burner phones, especially if you have somebody traveling from another state.
I ain't do it, but if I did, I wouldn't have lied so much to the police. That's what made her look fishy. She need to own her, you know what I mean? He was cheating, I was cheating. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I took that life insurance policy. I got a funeral to pay for.
Exactly. I ain't do it, but if I did, I would have never gone on those little spiritual walks with his sister. Like, why are you talking about you know me, in-laws, but like but like, you're literally in his sister's face the day before he dies. That's not a good look.
I ain't do it, but if I did, I would have not let them get away with me on that floor picture. Nigga, it's a nice ass floor and I wanted him to see it. Don't you like my fucking... It's a nice floor.
Right.
It's a...
Well, I think it was being worked on. It looked like there was somebody working on it because the fleur-de-lis is off-center, but...
This is my floor. Look how it's fucked up. Not me.
All right, so let's go on to parole or no parole. Okay. So they both got life, and it's very much a split in the family of Monique's side of the family, Corey's side of the family, and you can definitely tell that in, like, the two video options to watch this episode. Like, the Tamron Hall side is definitely Corey's side of the family. They're like, keep her ass in prison. She did this. She's horrible. She murdered him because she got found guilty of second degree murder and conspiracy to commit. Now, if you watch the Snapped episode, it's very much from the viewpoint of Monique's family side. And they're like, you know, we're hoping for one day to see her free because at the end of the day, she shouldn't have been found guilty for murder. And she's innocent. There's no way that she didn't kill him. I almost can agree with the whole, like, she didn't actually murder him, but it was conspiracy to commit. But, like, girl, you did so much. I think it was just the mayhem and intricacies of the case that really get you over that edge for that second degree murder charge. But it goes to show, like, these Snapped episodes, and we've done this a lot with Snapped, Fatal Attraction, all the ID shows. You just never know what side of the story you're gonna get from these. And it was fun comparing these two because it was almost like you got two totally different stories. Taken back to, like, on the episode, the Shanterica Madden episode, when, you know, she murdered Tina. You know, Tina's boyfriend reached out to me. Y'all don't know this, but he reached out to me on my personal, because can't nobody find Tazzy's personal. And one of the things that he said, though, was he regrets doing one of the episodes that he's on because the way that they twist the story for it to be shown and entertained and consumed by daytime television, you know, IDTV, that's daytime television. That's what everybody and your aunties and them watching. So the way that they twist that story to make it more digestible for the viewing audience, it twists the stories and tells a lot of untruths. And he was like, even my words were twisted. And I just hated how that story came. And he was talking about how he regretted it. So I wonder how many stories are we looking at and we're getting the twists? Because even think about the twins. Their Snapped episode was very much like their mother part. That was probably the only. That was the only. Yeah. That was like their mother part. You didn't drink. And she was a party girl. Like, so it's kind of interesting that people are like, oh, Snap, but Snapped isn't the end all be all. We're not the end all be all. We are not even reporters. They're at least somewhat reporters over there. I think they took an ethics class in journalism. We didn't. Fuck this.
I definitely like when there's a bunch of shows and look at everybody's perspective.
So, I mean, if they put her appeal in and she gets through and they take away her second degree murder charge and keep her at conspiracy, she'll probably get to see the light of day. But as of right now, they just...
I just don't feel wishing like and praying. They have enough. You know what I mean? Like, I think their motive was, feel like their evidence was weak. I mean, there's Carmichael saying he did it. But also, it's some niggas... Well, I was going to say, it's some niggas who admit to some shit for less time, but he got life too.
Yeah. Alrighty, let's read some... Let's get out of here. Let's read some reviews.
All right, one right here. This one says, child, I'm hooked. I can't seem to stray away from these episodes. I love it. I love it. I love. Keep doing y'all. That one's from a foodie who loves murder.
All righty. This one is from Bomb Sean. Yes. Says, this is my crack. I came across this podcast on TikTok, and baby, when I tell you I'm stuck, I'm stuck. It's the point I binged all the episodes in 2 days. Child, you did. I'm over here fiending bad for my weekly fix. Please don't stop this beautiful work, ladies. You women are so... It cut off. I'm cut off. So something. Thank you, Bombshine.
Even with meadow underline.
Out in the street.
Murder.
Alrighty, y'all. If y'all want to keep up with us, you can email us at sisterswhokillpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at sisterswhokill. Follow us on Instagram at sisterswhokillpod. You can follow us on TikTok at sisterswhokillpodcast. What else can you do? You can join the discussion group, but please, oh my gosh, like, answer the questions and read the rules, like, or I'm gonna shut it down.
No! If you want to be a chance to be on the show.
Oh, yes, if you want to be on the show, I'm gonna try and put the link in the discussion group. I mean, in the discussion group. I'm gonna try and put the link in the bio so that you can see how to leave us a voicemail of, I didn't do it, but if I did, this is how to get away with it.
Talk to us, we talk back. Bye.